All right, Alexander, we have got a meeting in Sochi between Russian President Vladimir Putin and Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan. And I'm sure they're going to discuss many important topics. It's interesting how often Erdogan meets with Putin, isn't it? We had reports from Aristovich. Of course, everything Aristovich says, you have to, take with a grain of salt. He had reports saying that the Russians have drones from Iran, but we do know that the Russians and Turkey are talking about those Bayraktar drones and perhaps even manufacturing them in Russia. So that's something that they may discuss, a military business, military cooperation. That's a possibility. Of course, they're going to discuss the flare-up in Nagorno-Karabakh between Azerbaijan and Armenia. Of course, they're going to discuss Syria. And of course, they are going to discuss Ukraine, the grain, the wheat shipments, the cooperation they have there, but also, I believe, just a general discussion about Ukraine and NATO and the overall picture. So, which one do you want to start off with first? Did I leave anything out of the picture? I don't think so. But
Well,
where should we begin?
I think also, of course, economic links between Turkey and Russia. Now, of course, bear in mind that Nord Stream 2, as we know, is switched off. Nord Stream 1 is barely working. The various Ukrainian pipelines are now basically closing down. And the Yamal pipeline is going in the opposite direction. I mean, the gas is flowing from Germany to Poland and from Poland, presumably, to Ukraine. So that leaves only Turk Stream of all the big pipelines that's still functioning and functioning with reasonable efficiency. And there've been talk about building spurs to Turks, from Turk Stream to Hungary, to Serbia, to all sorts of places. So I'd be very surprised if they're not going to be talking about that. Turkey's going through a major economic crisis. Connecting itself with Russia would make a huge amount of sense. It might be the way, ultimately, the real way to stabilize the Turkish lira. In other words, to find some way of connecting it, linking it up with the ruble, that would provide it with some kind of long-term backing, which might solidify it and get Erdogan out of his financial problems in Turkey, which are mounting all the time. And of course, Turkey can also supply a lot of the kind of things that the Russians are going to have problems replacing quickly because of Western sanctions. I don't mean the high-end technologies, which the Russians are probably able to replace a lot of them by themselves and import from China and such places, but things like furniture making, where the Turks are actually quite good at furniture making, for example, that sort of thing. So economics will play a big role, but you're absolutely right. The key discussions are going to be on geopolitics. They're going to be on all the various things that we're talking about. And notice how these two play chess with each other, against each other, at one and the same time as they meet with each other. So we have this flare-up now in Nagorno-Karabakh with Azerbaijan attacking Armenian troops. Russian peacekeepers, we now hear, are being redeployed to the front lines. If you think that it's just chance that this attack from Azerbaijan has happened just before Erdogan is due to meet Putin, well, I have a bridge to sell you. That's all I'm going to say. I mean, it's clearly, as far as I'm concerned, Erdogan reminding Putin that he's also got his particular pieces of leverage that he could play, his pieces that he can move on the counter. He's reminding Putin, yeah, look, at the moment, you may be more powerful than me, but you also need me. I can make trouble for you in your backyard. I can cause trouble for you in the Caspian region, because I got my ally Azerbaijan there in the Caucasus, the Southern Caucasus. I've got my ally there. You can't afford to seem as the betrayer of the Armenians. So, I've got my cards. You can't disregard me. You can't walk over me simply because I'm going through an economic crisis. So this is obviously a topic that's going to be discussed, and it's clearly one that Erdogan is going to want to make his points to Putin over. And it's a way of Erdogan reminding Putin that, you know, he's a big player. And they're also going to want to talk about Syria. And here it's interesting that there is, as well as rivalry and competition between Erdogan and Putin, there's also increasingly a community of opinions, because Erdogan is now openly saying that the Americans in Syria are sponsors of terrorism and that they are the big destabilizing force in Syria, and that he wants all those American troops in Syria to be pulled out. Now, when he talks about terrorism, he's talking about different terrorists from the ones the Russians are talking about. The Russians talk about jihadi terrorists, and of course, as we know, Erdogan is intensely relaxed about jihadi terrorists. On balance, if anything, he's actually fairly supportive of jihadi terrorists. He is talking about Kurdish fighters whom he defines as terrorists. But the point is, the United States has been involved in backing both types of fighters, both the jihadi fighters that Putin calls terrorists and the Kurdish fighters that Erdogan calls terrorists. So both Putin and Erdogan are now agreed that the US must leave Syria. Now, that's now the Russian position. It's the Turkish position. Of course, it's also for a long time been the Iranian position. But whereas the Russians, if they were to attack the American troops in Syria, that would be very difficult and very dangerous for them. If the Iranians did the same, that would be very difficult. If the Turks started to push pressure, bear in mind that they are in theory a NATO ally, you know, that gives the Russians, the Iranians, the Syrians, all of those people who want those American troops out, that puts them in a stronger position. So they're going to talk about that. They're also going to talk about negotiations for an end to the Syrian war. And I'm getting the impression that even Erdogan now is becoming tired of the Syrian war. I don't think he likes Assad. He'd love to see Assad go. But I think it's becoming, frankly, an embarrassment and a weight even for him. So they're going to be talking about Syria, and they will have a lot to agree about there. And, of course, overall, the big story, they're going to talk about Ukraine. And there's going to be talk about how to advance that. It's now, I think, universally acknowledged by all informed people that Russia is winning the war in Ukraine. I read an article just before we started this program in the Financial Times, which appeared to pour cold water, for example, on Ukraine's Kherson counteroffensive. You know, this offensive we've been hearing about ever since March, April, which is only about to start. But even the Financial Times is now, it still talks about this offensive, but it now says it's only going to be a limited counteroffensive. And when you actually drill into the article itself, you come away with serious doubts about whether it's even going to happen at all. So everybody can see that the direction of the war in Ukraine. Erdogan knows that Putin is going to win. Erdogan knows that the outcome of this is that Putin will be in complete control of the northern Black Sea, including Odessa, Nikolaev, all of these places. So he wants to make sure that when that happens, Putin doesn't forget that Turkey also has interests here. It has interests, economic interests in Ukraine. It has interests in the grain trade, where Erdogan has positioned himself very cleverly, actually. And, of course, beyond that, there's military cooperation. So Erdogan has been selling Bayraktar drones to Ukraine, to the intense annoyance of the Russians, by the way. They were very angry with him when he first started doing that. it looks increasingly less likely that he's going to get the F-16 fighters that he wants from the US. It's, you know, sometimes it's on that story, sometimes it's on, sometimes it's off. So military cooperation with the Russians as well. So all of this is going, all of this is happening together. And the other thing to say, and it goes directly to the point that you made at the start, it's so interesting how often Erdogan meets with Putin. Erdogan is supposed to be the leader of a NATO state, yet he meets with Putin far more often than he meets with the President of the United States, who is the leader of NATO. And not only that, but it is well known that he actively dislikes the current President of the United States. So you have that dynamic playing out too. So he goes, he meets his frenemy, Putin, in Sochi. They play chess against each other, pretty cynically, pretty ruthlessly. But at the same time, they're working with each other on all kinds of things. They're working, they're going to be working, I suspect, more intensively alongside each other in Syria over economic cooperation, over gas, over grain. And at the same time, there is the geopolitical play, the outcome of the war in the Black Sea.
Yeah. Erdogan despises Biden. He cannot stand Biden. Everyone knows that. Biden, I think, despises Erdogan. But at this point in time, it doesn't matter what Biden thinks, because Biden's not doing any of the thinking. The point is that Erdogan despises this White House administration. He actually got along really well with the Trump administration, on a side note. Don't also forget that Erdogan has that nice NATO, Sweden, Finland card up his sleeve as well, where he can, you know, pull that out whenever he wants. And he will. There's no doubt about that, because you mentioned the F-16s. Yeah, he's going to have fun with that one. I've no doubt about it. This is how I'm going to say this as a Greek. And obviously, you know, as a Greek, we've had our issues with Erdogan. But as someone who's on the outside looking in, this is how diplomacy is done, in a way. I mean, Russia and Turkey, historically, and even recently, and even in the past 5 to 10 years, they've had a rocky relationship. It's been on and off again, you know, stop and go. They came close to conflict at one point with the shooting down of the plane over Syria. But no matter all the problems they have, very, very serious problems in Nagorno-Karabakh, in Syria, extremely serious problems in Syria and Nagorno-Karabakh. And even in Ukraine, they've been at odds. They always manage to find a way to sit down at the table, speak with each other. Turkey did not impose sanctions on Russia. Russians are traveling to Turkey this summer, and they're holidaying in Turkey this summer. Turkey has adopted, or they're about to adopt, the Mir card as well. They always find a way to sit down with each other, and it's a process, and they work out their problems. They play chess, as you say. They don't always get along, but they find a way to get along, and they find a way to coexist and to prosper. And this is a model for diplomacy. I kind of wish that Greeks are going to get mad at me, but I kind of wish that the Greek government would see how Russia does diplomacy. And even if you have, you know, major issues with a country, even if you're enemies in the past or even enemies today, you can still find a way to deal with each other and sit down with each other. And it's never easy, but they do it. They are kind of, you know, Putin and Erdogan are kind of a model, in a way, of how, you know, geopolitics is done. Or would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And can I just say, talking about countries that have been enemies and the leaders of countries that have been enemies finding ways to get along with each other. In the 1930s, Greece and Turkey were actually quite friendly, and there was a very close and friendly relationship between Venizelos, the Greek prime minister, and İnönü, who was, of course, Kemal Atatürk's right hand and his eventual successor. And I know a little bit about that because my grandfather, by the way, for a very brief period of time before the First World War, was Venizelos' secretary and had continued to have some contacts with Venizelos. So you can see that it's also been in our past as well. We have known how to conduct diplomacy with countries that we've had, you know, unfriendly relationships with. And we seem to have lost that skill. And we are now in a situation, by the way, where Russia recognises Turkey as a friendly country. Putin and Erdogan meet in Sochi, despite all of those problems, despite the fact that they've been on opposite sides in the Syrian war, despite the fact that they've been on opposite sides in the Libyan war, despite the fact that they've had, Turkey has done all kinds of funny things in Ukraine, with which the Russians are very unhappy, and funny things in Kazakhstan and Central Asia, with which the Russians are very unhappy. And, you can multiply them. And, of course, we now have the Azerbaijanian-Armenian thing at the same time. And yet the Russians still officially consider Turkey a friendly country, whereas about a couple of days ago, they included Greece in the category of unfriendly countries. Now, who would have thought that a few years ago? I mean, it shows, obviously, the skill, you know, the way in which Russians conduct diplomacy, that they can swallow all of Erdogan's provocations. It must be difficult to do at times, and it does provoke criticism from time to time in Russia. But it also shows, and I have to say this, I mean, Erdogan, he may be something of an amateur in diplomacy, but he does do diplomacy, and he does it with flair and some skill. He's always at risk of overplaying his hand, but he always knows how to draw back. And whenever a crisis like the one in Ukraine explodes, he sees the opportunities that presents, and he seizes it. So the Russians are now tied up in Ukraine, and he's going to Sochi. He's positioned himself in Turkey as a critical middleman, and he's going to make the most of that. He's going to get economic deals. He's going to probably get military deals. He's going to get progress on Turk Stream. He's going to do all of these things. And he does it, one has to say this, with great skill.
Yeah. All right. So we've mentioned Ukraine. That's going to be one of the topics we're going to talk about. You mentioned NATO. Obviously, Turkey is a very important member of NATO, if not the second or third most important country in NATO, outside of, say, the U.S., you know, France, U.K. I mean, Turkey is up there. We have a statement from Stoltenberg with regards to NATO and Ukraine, Alexander, and not many people are talking about this statement. During a speech in Norway, Stoltenberg, the Secretary General of NATO, said, "In this conflict, NATO has two tasks, supporting Ukraine and preventing the war from escalating into a full-scale war between NATO and Russia." Now, I found this statement to be fascinating, because in the previous months, the goals of NATO were to defeat Russia, to arm Ukraine so that they can defeat Russia. Russia was losing, Ukraine's going to win, and NATO is going to give them the equipment so that Ukraine wins. It was to give Russia a bloody nose. It was to halt any type of progress from Russia, to stop Russia from advancing, and NATO was all in support of Ukraine to do that. I mean, it was all kinds of statements focused on unwavering support for Ukraine. At times it was Ukraine is winning, Russia is losing. At times it was Zelensky's going to be marching into Moscow. At times it was, we are doing all of this to effect regime change in Moscow, to give Putin a bloody nose. It was all of these statements. Now the two goals of NATO are to help Ukraine, to support Ukraine. But our most important thing is that we don't get a war between NATO and Russia. What do you make of this statement in the context of what's going on in Ukraine at the moment?
Well, they've seen the signs. And I, by the way, I agree, it's a very important statement. And it echoes some of the mood music that's coming out of Washington. It's a very, very important statement because now I think it is indisputable. Even the most fervid supporters of Ukraine are starting to understand, I think, that Ukraine is losing the war. Now, I'm going to do a very brief rundown of military events. We talked yesterday about how the Russians have captured, broken through the front lines across Donbass. They've captured this village, this fortified village of Persky, which is a major fortified point. They've also apparently broken into this important town of Bakhmut, which is the key to the Ukrainian defences in Donbass. Everybody can see that Ukraine is losing the battle in Donbass. And I can remember, not so long ago, back in April, Stoltenberg, after the Russian withdrawal from Kiev, he's saying that the key thing now is for us to provide as much military material to Ukraine as possible so that Ukraine can win the battle in Donbass. There's an interval of time before the battle in Donbass begins. We've got to make sure that Ukraine wins it. Even Stoltenberg can see Ukraine is going to lose it. We now have admissions. As I said, there was this big admission in the Financial Times that any Ukrainian counteroffensive in Kherson is going to be a limited counteroffensive. And in fact, everybody can see that it's not going to happen. And so Ukraine is unequivocally losing the war. It is becoming a major economic drain. And when I say a major economic drain, I hadn't realised until today, but it seems that the fact is that the Western powers are actually paying all of the wages of the Ukrainian armed forces. It's not Ukraine that's paying its army anymore. It's the West that's paying its army. I mean, the wages are being paid through Western aid. In other words, they've become almost, if you like, a mercenary force. They probably won't like me saying that, and many of them perhaps don't even realise it. But they become a mercenary force for the West, and one that's losing. So what they now have to do is find some way to start to draw back. And we now have criticisms of Zelensky. We see comments from Jim Garrity on National Review, as we discussed recently, that he's saying that Zelensky's being prepared as the fall guy for when Ukraine is defeated. And we see Stoltenberg coming along saying, well, we're there to support Ukraine, but really the priority is not so much supporting Ukraine, that's a given, but preventing the war escalating and enlarging. In other words, we know Ukraine's going to lose, and we're now redefining the mission. It's no longer helping Ukraine to win. It's pretending that it was to prevent World War III.
Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts? Covered a lot of ground.
Well, we covered a huge amount of ground. I think that the Ukrainian defeat in this war, which is coming, is going to have a major effect on political alignments in Europe. I think it'll be, in spite of Stoltenberg's anxiety to redefine the mission, we weren't really out to make Ukraine win the war. Nobody thought that would happen. It was all about preventing it expanding. Everybody, especially in the region, in Eastern and Central Europe, will see this as a major defeat for NATO, and at least for the Biden administration. And we're going to see, when all that plays out, we're going to start to see a big shakeout. And we're going to see different countries starting to reassess their policies. Erdogan is already doing it. That's why he's gone to Sochi. He's preparing Turkey for the position it needs to be in when Russia wins the war in Ukraine. And we're going to see other countries, Bulgaria, the various Yugoslav republics, perhaps Romania, perhaps some of the Central European states, Czech Republic, maybe Slovakia, I think very probably. And, of course, first and foremost, Hungary. They're all going to start reassessing their foreign policies, reassessing their linkages, because they're going to say, at the end of the day, if there is a real war, the United States and NATO are not as strong as they made themselves out to be. They failed against the Russians in Ukraine. So we've got to rebalance our foreign policies. We've got to start repositioning. We've got to start opening discussions with the Russians.
All right, we will leave it there. TheDuran.locals.com, everybody, and go to the Duran shop. Get 10% when you use the code at checkout. Good day. Take care.